I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Governor Bob Ferguson praises President Donald Trump for his cooperation as wildfires tear through Spokane. Plus, school officials charged with failing to report the alleged assault of high school wrestler Callie Keeler by a transgender opponent, and nationwide momentum in the fight to protect girl sports. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. We are not traditionally a breaking news show, but what's happening in Spokane is just so devastating. The videos are horrific. We've seen these wildfires tear through highly residential areas of Spokane. 65,000 people have been evacuated. More than 700 structures have been destroyed. Fires there have tore through about 8,000 acres. At last check, they were 0% contained. And this is, you know, an extraordinary situation. Eastern Washington is very used to wildfires, but typically they happen in sparsely populated areas. And for so much of the city of Spokane to be under evacuation orders, for so many structures to have burned, I don't have to tell you, is a state of emergency and an absolute tragic disaster. Governor Bob Ferguson had a press conference surrounded by officials from both political parties, and I thought it was a very important moment for, you know, especially I think Governor Ferguson to talk about the cooperation that's happening right now with President Trump.
I will just say I can't speak to the past. I wasn't governor then. But what I can say is I deeply appreciate the president taking time. I think I requested a conversation. I'm losing track of the hours here today, but just a few hours ago. And I was on the phone with him literally a couple hours later. And I had the clear sense he understood what was going on. I had the clear sense he'd been briefed on what was going on. He was knowledgeable about the situation. And I appreciated that.
Yeah, and one of the people who've been brokering these conversations between the federal government and the state of Washington is Congressman Michael Baumgartner. He'll join us momentarily, of course, the Republican member of Congress from the Spokane area. First, a couple stories here as we talk about the devastation. KXLY Spokane spoke to a man who's lost everything.
As sun rose over the Indian Trail neighborhood Sunday morning, you could hear the eerie sounds of gas lines spraying fire into the air as homes around them were still smoldering.
This is my garden. And this was my happy place. In no time, it started coming up this way. And then I smelled plastic, like you could smell when a house is burning.
He tried to save the home that housed his memories, but had to leave it behind. And when he returned this morning,
I had hopes that my sprinklers were going to work, but I came around the corner and I saw my chimney. I don't think I'm going to rebuild here because I don't ever want to have to relive a fire coming up this hill again.
That's just horrible. State Representative Jenny Graham also lost everything in the fires over the weekend, sharing this picture of a charred American flag where her home once stood. We are just heartbroken for Representative Graham and for her husband and for everybody in the Spokane area who has lost their homes or had to evacuate due to these ongoing fires. As I mentioned, Congressman Michael Baumgartner has been on the ground. He's a Republican who represents the 5th Congressional District in Washington. And in fact, we're getting ready to speak with him this morning. He was on the phone with the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. So he's in steady contact with the other Washington, trying to make sure there are as much resources as possible for the state of Washington now and in the future as people try to rebuild. He joined us for a very quick update on what the latest is in Spokane. Congressman, welcome to Undivided. First, you've lived in Eastern Washington a long time. Have you ever seen anything like this?
Well, we've certainly had fires for a long time in Eastern Washington, but we've never had the size of the devastation we've had here in Spokane, just the amount of structures, the way the fire jumped the river, came up into neighborhoods. So no, there's never been anything like this in Spokane that I know of.
What is the current state of things in terms of, is there an active risk, the fire, et cetera?
We still have a lot of people under zone three evacuation, which is the highest level of evacuation, means you need to go now. Fortunately, we got some cooler weather yesterday and today, but the problem is there's just no rain on the horizon. And while it has been a little bit cooler today, it's going to get hot again up near 100 here at the end of the week. And so we're still not out of this, and very, really severe fire danger looking ahead.
Yeah, we just heard Governor Bob Ferguson, something I haven't seen him do, and I'm glad that this isn't political because it shouldn't be, but praising President Trump for being informed of the issue, you know, for his cooperation. My understanding is you've had a little bit to do with trying to sort of bridge that gap between our state and the federal government. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I spoke with Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen, who has oversight over FEMA yesterday. Mark Wayne and I actually know each other from the House gym last year we worked out, and then have been in touch with the White House as well, too. It was very significant that the president did grant a disaster declaration for Washington State last year for the flooding on the west side of the state. And so I really appreciate the president you know, not looking at the policy, not being political. And I appreciate Governor Ferguson saying thank you to the president. We need to continue to have thank yous as well.
Yeah. So tell me, I mean, I know you've been out nonstop. Tell me what the mood is like on the ground and what you're hearing from residents.
It's just tough. I mean, people that you know have lost everything, have lost their houses. You know, State Representative Jenny Graham lost her house. One of my campaign workers lost his house. We were literally out doorbelling, just been at a parade, and we're out doorbelling. And all of a sudden he said, hey, I got to go. I said, absolutely. And then got the report later on that, you know, just a matter of hours, his house was gone. So, you know, there's stories like that coming in. Obviously, people are reaching out from across the country, and they reach out here. So, you know, it is very challenging and very busy time for us.
Yeah, this continues to be, you know, a pretty significant issue for a big chunk of Eastern Washington. There have been several major fires already this summer. Thankfully, a lot of them were in areas that were sparsely populated, if not at all. But I mean, what is for people living over there, this has to become sort of a question of, can I continue to live here? I know there's a lot of insurance companies that won't even insure homes anymore. So I guess, what does this mean for kind of the long term for Eastern Washington?
Well, we really need to get our fuel loads down and have better forest management practices. You know, I'm the son of a WSU forestry professor. My uncle was a smoke jumper. I worked for fire science teams for the Forest Service when I was in college. And we just have, with the environmental practices and all the losses, we just have way too much timber and fuel loads in our fire. So the first thing is we need to thin those things out. And then, you know, it's not every summer like this. It's some summers, and it's just really is that combination of high fuel loads, really dry weather, and then really, really high winds is what got us here. So, you know, when you live in a forested area, you're never going to be away from the threat of forest fires, but there are things we can do to mitigate it.
Yeah, and I just end here. I mean, what does the community need? What do they need from us? What does the emergency need there?
Well, I would suggest people look at the Red Cross for emergency support, Second Harvest Food Bank, if there's food support. But really, the community is just going to need, you know, financial resources more than anything else. But look, Spokane has gone through tough times before, and this is a community that steps forward and helps each other at times like this. So I have every confidence that we will rebound and come together, you know, in this moment. This is the people of Eastern Washington are proud people, but they're very tough people, and they're very compassionate people. So we'll get through this together.
All right, Congressman Baumgartner, our heart goes out to you, to everyone over there. I also saw the images of Jenny Graham's, what used to be her house, just absolutely horrifying. So thank you for being on the ground there and for helping out, and we'll stay in touch.
Okay, thank you, Brandy.
Yeah, we appreciate Congressman Baumgartner for that update from the ground. Again, 65,000 people evacuated in the greater Spokane area. 700 structures have been destroyed. Still a high risk over there right now. But the good news coming out of this, that the state of Washington and the federal government, including Governor Ferguson and President Trump, seem to be working well together. We would expect nothing less during a situation like this. And so certainly we're thinking about everyone over there. And really, there have been multiple fires already this summer that have threatened life and property. So far, no loss of life in these fires in Spokane that we know of or that we have been told of by officials, and let's hope that it stays that way. But we will be keeping up to date on the latest over there, and we're thinking about all of you. All right, some major news on a story that we first broke back in early February about Callie Keeler. Callie Keeler is the high school wrestler in Puyallup who was, unbeknownst to her, wrestling a biological boy when she says and said at the time when this happened back in December that that boy sexually assaulted her intentionally on the mat. Here's a video of that alleged assault. And this was two different Puyallup high schools wrestling one another. You see Callie's reaction there in the moment as she said that this biological boy reached around and not just inadvertently, not just for a fleeting moment, but for an extended period of time, put his fingers in her private area. She said she'd been wrestling for 14 years. She'd never experienced anything like it. She immediately told her coach, and at the time she thought that this was a girl, until another coach came over and said, that's a biological boy. But even not knowing that it was a biological boy, she told her coach she felt as if she had been sexually assaulted. And so we know that we've been waiting for charging decisions in this case. The Pierce County Prosecuting Attorney's Office already said it wasn't going to charge the trans wrestler with sexual assault because they said, look, you know, touching is part of wrestling. We can't prove definitively that this was an intentional sexual assault. I disagreed with that decision based on the preponderance of the evidence, the video in the moment. But one thing I said at the time when they made that charging decision is that they still had to decide whether to charge school officials who knew about the accusations of assault with failure to report, because we knew based on emails that we'd reviewed that it took 2 months for school officials to report this to the police as required by law. We now know that two school officials have been charged with failure to report. Both Jason Smith, who is the high school principal, and Peter Collins, who is the athletic director at Rogers. So they have both been charged, again, failure to report as required by state law. It says for both of them that in Pierce County, Washington, between or on December 6th and on or about January 30th, the defendant, defendants Peter Collin and Jason Smith, failed to comply with mandatory reporting laws. And so now they are now facing, of course, criminal charges. It is a misdemeanor charge. But I just didn't see any other outcome here. And as I said at the time, we know they failed to report. It wasn't even in dispute. We had the emails where Callie's mother was following back up with the coach saying, hey, my daughter says this happened. Has she already informed you? What's going to be done about it? And then we know based on our reporting that 2 months went by. We emailed the school shortly after we emailed the school to inquire about why this had not been reported to the police. They finally notified the school resource officer, which started a criminal investigation 2 months too late. So I want to go through the very important timeline here, because I actually think for the principal, Jason Smith, that there should be a second charge of lying to law enforcement, and I'll explain why. I also think the timeline is important because I had initially thought, why isn't the coach being charged with failure to report? But now in reading this, I understand why. So the coach is Miss Scott, just so you can get your bearings here. So Miss Scott, the coach, had forwarded the email from Callie Keeler's mother on to school officials, including the principal, Jason Smith, and the athletic director, Peter Collins, on December 8th, 2025. It should say 2025. There's an error in the court document. So 2 days after the alleged assault, the coach said, hey, I've got this email. What do we do about this? So he replied immediately. The principal, the athletic director, replied immediately, copied the principal, and said that to Miss Scott, the coach, that she would not be part of the investigation and that it would be handled by the administration. So coach reports it. Principal, athletic director say, hey, thank you for reporting this. We are going to launch an investigation. You're not going to be part of that. The administration is going to handle it. It says Miss Scott spoke with Callie Keeler during wrestling practice on December 8th, and the coach informed Callie, hey, there is going to be an investigation. I've let the school know about this. So I think that this timeline, and I'll get to more of it in a moment, explains two things. Why was the coach not the one going to the police? And why didn't Callie Keeler just go to the police in December? It's because both of them had been told by the athletic director and the principal, we've got this, we're launching an investigation, you don't need to be part of that, we've got it handled. So of course, 2 months go by. And then there's a communication on January 28th, where Callie Keeler and her mother are asking the school about the status of the investigation. Nearly 2 months have gone by. So Ms. Scott, the wrestling coach, responds to this communication, says, I've spoken to the principal, I've spoken to the athletic director, they would not provide her with any information. So Callie Keeler responds and asks the coach, if since the district is dismissing the issue, should I file sexual assault charges? The coach replies, they have shut me out of the situation, and directs Callie Keeler to speak with the co-defendants, Collins and Smith. So again, 2 months later, the family checks in with the coach. What's happening with this? The coach says, I have been shut out of the investigation. Contact the principal and the athletic director directly. So then it says, after nothing is done, that's when Callie Keeler takes it upon herself, Friday, January 30th, and she goes to the school resource officer. So it says the same day that Callie Keeler goes to the school resource officer to file a school incident report, that's when finally the principal, Jason Smith, decides to do an actual investigation. It says the same day Defendant Smith first notified the school resource officer of the potential incident by asking the school resource officer to review the video possessed by Defendant Collins. The school resource officer generated the first law enforcement report of the incident. Defendant Smith told the school resource officer that Callie Keeler's mother had spoken to him in December, but that she did not mention a sexual assault. That is a lie. That is a lie. So all of a sudden, they're being called out by Callie Keeler and her mother, 2 months in. What's going on with this? Callie Keeler decides, I'm going to take it upon myself. I'm going to do a school incident report. And then all of a sudden, the principal is going to the school resource officer 2 months in and saying, hey, you know, I talked to the mom back in December, but nobody mentioned anything about a sexual assault. That's a lie. That's why I'm surprised that there's not an additional charge in here for lying to law enforcement, because the school resource officer is a member of law enforcement. And then he goes on to say that it wasn't until February 12th, 2026, 66 days after he received first notice of the incident and 12 days after he first asked any member of law enforcement to become involved, that finally he reported the incident to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, as he's required to do by law. We also know, of course, it took 66 days to report it to law enforcement officially. And then again, when it says Defendant Smith stated that he learned about the incident during a phone call with Ms. Brown on December 9th, that's contrary to his statement to the school resource officer. So in all of this, he's saying one thing to police, that, yeah, I learned about this incident December 9th. That's different than what he told the school resource officer, which is, oh, I was told about something December 9th, but not that it was a sexual assault. So we now have a principal and an athletic director for Rogers High School that are facing charges of failure to report. Again, I think that that should include lying to law enforcement. We'll reach out to the prosecutor's office on this. So we got this statement from Kate Anderson with the Alliance Defending Freedom. That is the law firm that was representing Callie Keeler and her family. It says the Pierce County prosecutors have taken a critical step to address the school district's failure to promptly report the sexual assault on Callie Keeler last December. School officials should protect their students, not ignore their privacy and safety, and then ignore them when they report sexual assault. The statement went on to say school officials also need to be honest about their athletic policies. Callie and her mom had a right to know and consent before Callie took the mat with a male. They still do. The school district betrayed them, and it continues to jeopardize female athlete safety by keeping these girls and their parents in the dark. And certainly the lawsuit on behalf of Callie Keeler that the Alliance Defending Freedom is involved in, you know, includes a variety of things. It was over the failure to report, also about keeping Callie in the dark and not giving her an opportunity to consent to wrestling against a biological male. Now, given the fact that the prosecutor's office has filed charges in this case against the school is going to have to settle. The school is going to have to either settle the case, some sort of payout, and absolutely justified. So I think that that gives, you know, absolute teeth to the claims that Callie Keeler and the Lines Defending Freedom are making. I just want to point this out because attorneys for the Rogers High School principal had put this in, you know, one of their responses to the prosecutor's office, that that principal was in 2019, again, Jason Smith, he was awarded an Educator of the Year Award, National Award in 2019. He was celebrated on the news, all of those things. Look, you can be the Educator of the Year, and maybe he is a good principal and a good mentor and a good educator, but the fact that, and he's been in that field for a long time, you know that you have a duty to report. And I saw people saying online, well, why do they have a duty to report if prosecutors say that there wasn't enough evidence of an actual crime? It doesn't matter. You don't get to be judge, jury, and executioner as a teacher or a principal or a superintendent. You have a duty under the law, and it doesn't have to. And in fact, I just want to read the RCW. The RCW imposes a duty on all professional school personnel having a reasonable cause to believe that a child has suffered abuse or neglect. He or she shall report incident or cause a report to be made to the proper law enforcement agency or to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. And it defines reasonable cause as a person witness, means a person witnesses or receives a credible or written oral report alleging abuse, including sexual contact or neglect of a child. So they received a credible report. It was on video. They don't get to be the ones to determine, is it credible enough to go to law enforcement? And they shouldn't want to be the ones to make that determination because it puts them in legal jeopardy, and then it puts the taxpayers in legal jeopardy who are going to have to foot the bill for a massive payout to Callie Keeler and to her family. Now, you know, so Teacher of the Year or not, it doesn't have anything to do with this. And there is no possible way they're not convicted of this. It's in writing. It's in emails. You were supposed to do something. You didn't do it. All of this, of course, is in the backdrop of another case in the state of Washington. Very similar. Remember the Longview school superintendent. She was arrested and charged with multiple crimes, including interfering with a law enforcement investigation because she failed to report a student-on-student sexual assault that had occurred in a locker room. What did she do? She took it upon herself to investigate. Again, tried to be judge, jury, and executioner. I don't know, in some mistaken effort to protect students or whatever it was, but now she faces two misdemeanors and a felony. And she was pulled out of the school district in handcuffs. And especially after that news came down, we on the show at the time said, well, it's only a matter of time before they're charged in the Callie Keeler case because they did almost the exact same thing. And it's black and white. There is no question in the world whether it was done. So we have a cultural issue in Washington public schools. It's one of the reasons why Let's Go Washington ran another initiative to restore parental rights and communication with parents, which is on the ballot in November. Vote yes. It's also why there's an initiative on the ballot in November to protect girls' sports. Vote yes to stop these things like what happened to Callie Keeler from happening again. And I go back to Callie was ready to report this to the coach, whether it had been a trans opponent or not, because she felt as if she was intentionally sexually assaulted and that grasp and the penetration occurred for a prolonged period of time, well above and beyond any sort of oil check that might inadvertently happen in athletics. But then to find out it was a boy when you had no idea you were wrestling a boy is just another violation for this young woman. So we have a cultural issue in Washington public schools. We have a policy issue in Washington state that allows a girl to be, and I'll say I believe that was a sexual assault. When I look at that, I understand the challenges in prosecuting it. But we have an issue in Washington state that allows a girl to be put in that position, that will continue to allow her to be put in that position if she continues to wrestle, which she's on the fence about. And then that will allow for a culture of secrecy where these school administrators feel empowered to just bury it or investigate it on their own. Absolutely unacceptable. So I think that these cases hopefully put teachers and school officials on notice. that they can't just hide these things. They have a duty to report so police can do a thorough and timely investigation. And none of this happens, I don't think, had Callie Keeler and her family not contacted us back at the end of January about the delay in anything meaningful happening at the school. And so now we see this latest wrinkle, and we will reach out to the school for comment on this and also, again, see where the lawsuit goes. But I think the school is going to want to be pretty quick to settle this one for sure. All right. Katie Wilson, Seattle Socialist Mayor, had a horrible week last week. A horrible week. And it started with tragedy, you know, a mass shooting at the Bight of Seattle. But it ended in a personal tragedy for her. And that is basically being exposed to the whole country as an absolute fraud. First, there are a lot of homes being listed for sale in Washington state. Might be a variety of reasons, but I hear from people all the time that they're leaving over politics and over taxation. And maybe you're starting to think about it. Maybe it started to creep into your mind. Maybe I do want to leave, or maybe I just want to downsize, or whatever it is. Reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team are the best at marketing. And when you look at the listings, go to their website, Sell With Wes, click on the little thing that says recently sold, and you can peruse some of the listings, and you see how they stand out. Marketing matters when you go to sell a home. But then, of course, you know, you want to make sure that the home, when potential buyers get there, looks as nice in person as it does online. And that's where their Listing Boost concierge service comes in, where they can come in, make cosmetic upgrades for you that you don't have to pay for until closing, if that's how you want to work it out. And then staging, we hear a lot from undivided viewers and listeners about how well Wes staged their home for sale. And all those things matter when you're trying to stand out in a crowded field of homes. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right. It was a very, very bad Friday for Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson, who faced a number of questions about her lack of experience on the job that became very apparent following a mass shooting at the Bight of Seattle. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. So, of course, mass shooting at the Bight of Seattle, immediately the city's response falls short. It took about 5 hours for the mayor and for the police department to offer any sort of briefing of the media. And there had been a lot of pressure on them all week to explain why. How could this have happened? There were a number of, you know, misinformation given out right away, a lack of information given out right away, 48 hours to even inform the public that there is a third or potentially fourth shooter on the loose. We don't even know what they look like. And so I will give so much credit to the local media because they really stepped up in that moment and asked a lot of difficult questions. So we broke the news, I believe it was overnight on Wednesday, that Chief Sean Barnes was out, that Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson had basically given him an ultimatum, either you resign or you be fired. And I said I thought that he should be fired for his treatment of a member of the press who was asking him legitimate questions and who he, you know, squared up to and berated. I thought that makes him unfit. But there's also this question of, did Seattle's mayor, you know, fire him or ask him to resign because she's trying to, you know, look like a leader who can make decisive decisions, or try to use him as a fall guy? So the news comes out officially Thursday. He's gone. He opted to resign, probably to get a very generous severance package. And then Katie Wilson had a press conference flanked by, you know, the command staff of the police department. So I went to this press conference on Friday. You guys, it was brutal. I mean, there were moments where Katie Wilson looked like she was about to cry. So I want to play just a couple of the moments. And again, a lot of credit to the press. So Chris Daniels of Como News has some quotes from city council members that are absolutely brutal about Katie Wilson's lack of leadership. So he sits there at length and reads to her face what the council members three floors down are saying about her.
Mayor, this is obviously the biggest decision you've made during your term. The council is not here. The council is not standing behind you. The council, as you know, has criticized, and I want to get down to their exact words. Joy Hollingsworth, the council president, called this move irresponsible, and it's a tad bit reckless. Deborah Juarez says the emergent issue is this. You do not fire your chief of police in the middle of a murder investigation. What we're seeing under this administration, her words, are more than just gaffes or missteps. I see a complete lack of leadership, and for us, for some of us, no confidence in this administration. This has reached a level where we have to have a serious conversation about the confidence we have in this executive. So this is your chance to respond to the council. Why should the city of Seattle and this council have confidence in your leadership going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll repeat what I said to one of your colleagues here, which is that I respect their differences of opinion. And as the mayor, as the executive of the city, I do have a different window into our police department than they do. And I'm making the decision that I believe is best and urgent at this time for our police department and for this city.
And she kept saying, I have a different window into the police department. And it's like, okay, what, explain then? Because she would not say definitively why she asked Chief Barnes to resign. And she just kept using, I have a window into the police department that you all don't have. It's like, okay, well, we don't have anywhere to go. We don't have anywhere to be. Tell us what this window is. You know, and she, oh, there's a lot of factors. Okay, well, again, we don't have anywhere to be. Tell us what those factors are. And so somebody clearly gave her that line. Just say you have a different window into the police department. She just kept repeating it. But Chris Daniels reading those quotes from council members out loud to her face. I'm sitting there and I'm like, I just wanted some popcorn with me in there. Natalie Swaby of King 5 News, another moment that stands out to me. The president of the police union is in there standing up behind Katie Wilson. And look, I think that's about, you know, showing solidarity and, you know, for police and that, hey, we're all going to try to move on together. And then Natalie Swaby of King 5 reads a statement to Katie Wilson's face about what the police union president, who's standing right there, said about her.
Statement that came out yesterday afternoon from the Police Officers Guild. It just said that with your administration, there's been confusion, messages, and chaos surrounding Barnes, and that public safety does not seem to be your priority. I want you to just address that. What would you say about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say again that there were really good reasons why we weren't able to offer information about Chief Barnes and our path forward until we had actually finalized those agreements and decisions. And as soon as we did that, we sent out a release yesterday and planned this press conference.
Yeah, again, she says, really, there were really good reasons we didn't communicate anything. Then, okay, tell us what the really good reasons are. We're all gathered here for this exact purpose. So there were a lot of questions like that, sort of beating around the bush about the issue, which is she's a Nepo baby who's had no real job experience in her life, and she's crumbling under the pressure. So I got a chance to ask Mayor Katie Wilson a question, and here's what I asked her.
There have been a lot of questions in the room today about your relative lack of experience. It's something that was brought up on the campaign trail. Black community leaders brought it up yesterday. As Chris alluded to, council members have brought it up as well. You're 7 months into the job. What can you say to community members who are concerned that you have not, at this point, shown the leadership capability to run this city for 3 more years?
I'll just say I'm working with a great team, and I believe that we are making the right decisions for this city.
Oh my gosh. What do you say to people who say you can't do this job and you can't last possibly 4 more years? I got a great team. I mean, I don't know what you say to a question like that, but that's probably not how I would answer it. And maybe she needs to be a little humble, I guess, and just say, look, yeah, this is a really tough job. I'm 7 months in. I'm still learning. I've got good people around me and all of this, but I've got this. And voters trusted me when they elected me. Something, anything. But I mean, she was so close to tears, you guys. So close to tears. And I really struggle to see a path forward for her for 3.5 more years. I mean, you know, there are going to be challenges that are worse than what happened at Bite of Seattle, where more lives are lost. And I think of all the, you know, tragedy Seattle has dealt with over the years. God forbid. And maybe there'll be some lessons from this, but it's just all a disaster. And then because Chief Barnes opted to resign, and his resignation letter was like one line to Mayor Katie Wilson, I think he played this smart by telling people, oh, you know, she fired me, and having members of the Black community go to her office to try to pressure, because then this way he got a bigger severance package. Jeremy Harris with Como News was the first to get his hands on this resignation agreement. And oh my gosh, this man's getting a lump sum of $600,000, which equates to 18 months of his salary. just to go away. He gets to keep his $50,000 signing bonus. He gets to keep his $60,000 relocation benefit, to which I say, you got a $60,000 relocation benefit? You didn't move your family here? Because, of course, one of the other issues was he was keeping, you know, one toe dipped in the water in Chicago, hoping to get the chief of police job there, which, by the way, is going to continue to be an issue because the deputy chief of police, Andre Sales, has been made the interim police chief. And for the record, I have heard great things about both of the deputy chiefs, Yvonne Underwood and Andre Sales, from rank and file officers that think both of them would be a good choice for that job. But Andre Sales, and I've met him, again, really nice guy. It has nothing to do with him as a person or a police officer. He has a place in Chicago as well. And he said during the press conference, you know, my wife and I love it here. We want to, you know, put down roots here. We have some kids that we're looking to sort of, you know, get through this period in their life, which I totally understand. So I'm glad he was transparent about that. But then on the other hand, you know, Yvonne, she's been with SPD for decades and clearly has deep ties to the community. And so I just wonder, you know, is Mayor Wilson really going to go down the path of, unless Andre Sales, like, immediately selling my place in Chicago, I'm moving here, we're buying a house, we're going to put down roots. So then we're going to do this whole thing all over again, where one of the chief criticisms of Sean Barnes would then apply to the new person who's going to be the chief of police. So just some continuing issues going on. But Mayor Wilson, I mean, I was texting with a progressive politician over the weekend who I shall not name. I wish they were brave enough to let me name them, but who said that they said she's just really not enjoying the job. And they believe that she's going to fake some sort of illness or some sort of family emergency to resign. That's what their prediction is. And that's how bad things have gotten. And I mean, she doesn't have a communications person right now. Their communications director or her communications director resigned. I almost feel so bad for her that I want to apply for that job. They'd have to pay me like $2 million a year for me to give all this up to go do it. But I'm almost like, I feel that bad for her because the city is just under the leadership of a woman child. And I don't know where we go from here. That segment has been brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. All right, a movement that started right here in Seattle to support Sophie Cunningham as she stands up for women and girls has now spread across the nation. A ton of momentum on this issue. And that also means a ton of craziness as well. We'll get to that next in our segment, Unbelievable. First, have you seen this? From the AG's office and from, like, I think it was King 5 that put it out. There's been this rash of, like, fake contractors putting in, you know, horrible roofs for people and then leaving them in a state of disrepair and just a whole mess. So because those are in the news, I want to remind you, we have wonderful sponsors who've been doing this work for a long time and are very well respected and definitely aren't fake contractors. Our friends at Valentine Roofing, I put my name and my reputation behind Valentine Roofing. Every customer can expect the Valentine experience, seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, extra mile service. So if you think your roof is on its last legs, if you want to beat the rain, beat the mad rush that usually happens mid-fall, Valentine Roofing is now offering priority scheduling for your roof replacement. That means when you call Valentine Roofing today, they can get your job started within 3 weeks of signing an agreement, and they make the process so simple for you. You can expect an estimate with transparent pricing and options that fit your needs in about an hour. So since 2008, thousands of Western Washington homeowners have chosen Valentine for their roofing needs. You can trust them too. Call 206-ROOFING to schedule your free estimate. Make sure you tell them I heard about you on Undivided with Brandi Cruz. 206-ROOFING, 206-ROOFING. And when you see those red vans in your neighborhood, you know that your neighbors are in good hands and you could be in good hands with Valentine as well. And with that, let's get to our segment. Unbelievable. In a good way. It's unbelievable! Da, 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 da. Wow, I remember left-wing bloggers after we held our rally outside Climate Pledge Arena last Tuesday, you know, to honor Sophie Cunningham and to talk about supporting girls' sports and girls' spaces. I remember the left-wing bloggers, oh, that flopped. There's only a few dozen people there. What a flop this was. Nobody cares about protecting women and girls. And now it has taken on a life of its own. So after we had that rally, which obviously went crazy viral because of the treatment of some of the young girls who were sitting in front row during the Storm Fever game, after that, people started holding these rallies outside everywhere the Fever have played since. So it happened down in Portland. People carried signs saying Democrats for Sophie. There was an Olympic, female Olympic athlete there. And the crowds have only grown. So it happened at the game in Portland where the Fever was playing and then in Minneapolis. And look who showed up in Minneapolis courtside. Riley Gaines herself and Jennifer Say, the founder of XXXY Athletics, those shirts that caused all that drama at the Storm game in Seattle. I just loved to see that. Now, I've been waiting for the crazy unhinged response. Now, it had been happening online, obviously. But these cities represent some of the wackiest areas in the country. I mean, the Fever played in Seattle, and then the Fever played in Portland, and then the Fever played in Minneapolis. And I knew that after our rally, Women Are Real, which is the organization that has been behind really structurally the rallies, you know, I knew they were going to go to Portland and then Minneapolis. And I'm like, ugh, you know, Antifa, far left, Transtifa, they are very active in these areas. Because when we were in Seattle, we didn't face too many like hecklers or anything. There were a few people standing up holding signs in opposition, which I'm fine with, which was totally fine, but no like violent or vitriolic anything. In Portland, they faced a little bit of it, but it didn't get really bad until Minneapolis and until the national attention around these rallies that were planned had grown so much. So I want to show you just a few of the signs and vitriol that these women were met with. This one really stands out to me because I think it just is illustrative of what the left has become. So you've got this Black woman, and following her around is a guy with a sign calling her a "see you next Tuesday." Just think about this optically for a second. White dude calling a Black woman a C-U-N-T because the Black woman is fighting for the rights of women and girls. Is that not just the modern day left in a nutshell? And mind you, again, 70 to 80% issue, an issue that Democrats were the ones leading the way on 20 years ago for Title IX. Democrats like Washington Senator Patty Murray. And now you fast forward and all of a sudden, women today who want the same things that Senator Murray and Democrats fought for 20 years ago are CUNTs. And then in Minneapolis, there were individuals trying to shout them down, calling them transphobes. And my favorite moment happened when the women gathered, took back their voices.
Let women speak!
You're not women.
Let women speak!
Protect trans women! 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 Protect trans women!
Let women speak!
Oh, good. Love this.
Let women speak!
Let women speak! Let women speak!
I mean, they got him to shut up. When does that ever happen? How cool is this to watch? Just this little thing that started in Seattle, and because of the unhinged reactions to us, you know, in the game, during the game, when the co-owner of the Storm came over and harassed 16-year-old Annalee Wilson, because of that, this has grown. There has never been this much momentum on the fight to protect girls' sports. Since, I mean, this really started, I guess, in earnest maybe 3 years ago. Let's Go Washington came in, ran an initiative. It'll be on your ballot in November. So this momentum couldn't come at a better time when Washington voters are going to get to decide in one of the bluest places on earth whether they want to protect girls' sports by prohibiting biological boys to compete against girls. Vote yes in November. Vote yes in November to protect girls' sports. But of course, the no on the initiative side is just as unhinged as some of these individuals who are coming to the games. They've spread a lot of lies about it. But I would just ask you, you know, what side are you on? So we look at these pictures from Minneapolis. We got Sophie Cunningham, who again is the first active professional female athlete to speak out in favor of protecting girls' sports. There's all these videos of her going up, signing things for young girls, hugging young girls, giving young girls shoes and stuff like that, and just being a genuinely joyful, wonderful human being. And then here's what we've got on the other side, the messaging. I didn't think I could dislike anyone more than Clark. Congrats, Cunningham. I didn't think I could dislike anyone more than Caitlin Clark. Congrats, Cunningham. And what do you hate Caitlin Clark for? Literally, what makes you dislike Caitlin Clark? Because she's white and she's really good at basketball? I just don't understand it. And so just that picture alone tells me what side of this I want to be on, as if common sense didn't already tell it. These people who are love and inclusion and tolerance, the most hateful, intolerant, bigoted people on the planet. And they prove it time and time again. And one of the things, again, I've been worried about as this movement grows is that Sophie Cunningham would kind of back away from it. Because, you know, maybe it's getting some negative attention or a distraction. Maybe she doesn't want people protesting on her behalf or anything like that. Hell to the no. She's doubling and tripling down. Look at the pictures that she took after the game in Minneapolis. There she is. Sophie Cunningham with Jennifer Say and Riley Gaines holding the sign that Riley Gaines had. Sophie, thank you. A girl mom. She's not backing away. She understands that this is common sense. This is the right side of history. And she's doing all of it at a time where she has the most to lose. Sneaker deals, all these things. She has the most to lose. And she's not backing down. She's doubling down. And I was asking Riley and Jennifer, I was like, oh my gosh, how did this picture come to be? Did you call her over? And apparently Riley had been, you know, messaging with her, and she's like, stand there, you know, I'll come out. So she came back out to take that picture with Riley Gaines and Jennifer Say. I just love this movement that's growing. Meanwhile, the unhinged coaches of the WNBA and some of the NBA players are showing no support for Sophie and no support for women.
How I'm seeing it is, if I could answer with, like, for me, sports is about belonging. It's about inclusivity. It's about allowing everyone to be their authentic self. So I'm all about women, little girls deserving to play, and that includes trans women. So I'm all about inclusivity.
I don't know that I would say that I'm educated enough from a scientific standpoint. I don't ever believe that exclusion is an answer. I know growing up, I played with the boys all the time.
So
there weren't girl sports.
Would you welcome a biological male in WNBA?
I don't know. When we talk about biological male and scientifically where we are, I think it's a totally different scenario.
It's not really a discussion we really have in our locker room. I think it's for leagues and the governing bodies to work with their athletes to find solutions, but our focus is on basketball, and that's what we talk about and how we can get wins, and obviously we didn't do that tonight, so we need to find an area to improve in that way.
And look, I mean, I get it that they want to focus on basketball. And they're sort of, you know, dismissing it. And that's maybe for Caitlin Clark's thing. And she's got enough hate coming her way as it is. I wish she would stand up because the momentum here, and I think a lot of these women know this is the right thing to do. For the coaches, you've lost your damn minds. Somebody told me, and I'm trying to find a copy of it, that the collective bargaining agreement for the WNBA states that men can't play. Like that's a rule of the collective bargaining agreement. And none of them would want a man to play. And I saw this one player, I think it was, or an ESPN analysis, who said, you know, we've had only one trans person in women's sports, and it has gone just fine. But they didn't mention that trans person is a woman that, like, identifies as a male. But it's a woman. That's why it's gone just fine. So I'm saying that I think the one thing that has to happen to put this all over the edge is a dude has to sign up to play. A dude has to sign up to play. Maybe somebody who didn't make it past college in the W or in the NBA and didn't make it into the NBA. And you have to say, look, I'm here. I'm ready to play. I identify as whatever it is. Clearly, you know, superior, so that they are forced to, I don't know, put up or shut up. It's just such a, you're sitting there. And the other people saying, this isn't even an issue in the WNBA. There are no men in the WNBA playing. Sophie isn't talking about the WNBA. She said in the very first statement she made about this, in a profile with ESPN, she said this is about standing up for young girls. Young girls who want to make it to the peak of their sport. But there is a reality in blue states across the nation that they're being forced to compete in some cases against biological boys. And it's happened here a lot. It's happened in California a lot, where you've had males take state titles from people. I mean, Callie Keeler. So it's not just losing titles, it's having to compete against a boy, you know, in a sport like wrestling. So this is about whether these women are going to be role models and stand up for future generations of WNBA players, of Olympic athletes. So they're just looking for reasons and excuses not to have the actual conversation. Oh, we don't have to worry about this. There's no men in the WNBA. Yeah, and if there were, you'd lose your freaking mind about it because you wouldn't be able to beat them. You wouldn't be able to beat them. And by the way, Caitlin Clark has said that before. There was a, even though she won't take a position on it now, there was some clip from an ESPN interview where she was asked, you know, who would you want to play one-on-one with? And she says, well, if it was an NBA player, all of them would smoke me. And so she's acknowledged that she couldn't be able, even she couldn't compete against anyone in the NBA. So let's just stop being stupid. Maybe if you stop giving such stupid answers, people wouldn't keep asking you about it. Absolutely outrageous. All right, we will get to some national news coming up next. First, our friends at First Mark Insurance are the ones you want to talk to if you're looking to save a little bit of money on your insurance. And just as a family, if your budget is feeling crunched, you might not think about having someone reevaluate your insurance needs. You've been with maybe the same insurance guy for years and years and years, and you don't think you could save any money. Take the First Mark challenge. You have nothing to lose. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they're going to do what's best for you. For instance, Undivided viewer Kate says she took the First Mark challenge and they were honest and they kind of just let us know we have the best insurance for our situation. She said, I'm glad we at least contacted them. So Kate was able to leave with a little peace of mind, and First Mark turned away her business because it wasn't what was best for her. That is the sign of an honest company. And it's why I use First Mark for all my insurance needs, personal and business. And their customer service is second to none. You know, when Mike and I came up for renewal, they did all the work. They went out, rechecked all our policies and saved us $2,000. Probably would never done that on our own. So FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. All right, I've got to talk about the shooting at the In-N-Out in Idaho. First of all, horrifying. And we have some video of the shooter, you know, where he's just going like car to car, basically, and he shoots into the windshield of a Tesla. I mean, how horrifying is this? And it's like, look, you never go anywhere expecting a mass shooting or a random shooting. But I would say, you know, at an In-N-Out parking lot is definitely not where you would expect it. And then a lot of people talking about the Good Samaritan with a gun who exchanged fire with the shooter, showed tremendous bravery, and goes there, ducks into the bushes. I don't believe he hit the shooter, but he did force him to retreat, likely saving lives. The shooter ultimately ended up killing himself. Two people were killed, seven were injured, and then the shooter also, like I said, killed himself. This from the New York Post. Hero armed citizen, off-duty state trooper, opened fire in Idaho, on Idaho In-N-Out gunman, tried to stop shooting that left two dead, seven wounded. And I didn't know that. So is that guy the off-duty trooper, or is there that guy and an off-duty trooper?
No, yeah, so that guy and then a trooper showed up as well, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely outrageous.
I think that's what I've heard.
So the killer, 24-year-old Chad Williams, he had an AR rifle. I think that's the other thing. This guy's got an AR, and at least in the Good Samaritan, he's got a handgun. This happened 2 in the afternoon. It says, we believe their actions, yeah, it is two of them. We believe their actions helped drive the suspect away from the scene, preventing further casualties. So the suspect left the scene, ended up taking his own life. Police saying, we want to take a moment and commend the actions of the off-duty officer and the citizen and their heroic action to stop this incident. And we still don't know a lot about motive and all of those things. I think that's still being determined, but horrific ordeal, two innocent people killed. And just an example of, and this is in Idaho, we were just in Idaho doing a story about their love of the Second Amendment and, you know, governments, you know, they're not interfering with the ability of good Samaritans to carry firearms and law-abiding citizens to carry firearms. And in this case, it really did make a difference, I think, in stopping a further loss of life. And that guy is brave as hell. I've just started, as you know, my firearms training. Not at the point where I would feel brave enough to go up against somebody with an AR-15.
Right, and he got out of his car, went around to the trunk. I mean, the guy's right there.
Absolutely. I mean, that is a brave, brave individual. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll. I wanted to ask you guys this just because I'm kind of curious how many of you have been impacted by wildfires this summer or are currently, you know, in sort of a danger zone. I asked if your property is currently under the threat of a wildfire. For me, Mike and I have some property in Eastern Washington that's just land. And if you'd asked this a couple days ago, we were very much under threat of wildfire. But thankfully, it stayed on the other side of the river, which was good, and really only burned some areas where there wasn't any, you know,
brush,
homes and stuff. Yeah. So, Nicole, I think your answer to this is no.
It's a no.
But, you know, the thing in Spokane just is a wake up call that it really can be anywhere under the right conditions. And I don't know if we know fully what has caused this fire in Spokane. Usually they're man-made. They're man-caused in some way. There are rumors, but we don't report on rumors. No. And so, but 95% of you, thankfully, said, no, you are not in the path of a wildfire right now. Joe said, Chelan, heartbreaking to spend yet another summer like this. Washington State Commissioner of Public Lands needs to be held accountable. A lot of people saying that they're impacted by the haze, and that became very apparent over here today. Where I walked outside, it didn't even feel like the light was up yet.
I know. I think tomorrow is supposed to be worse, even.
Yeah.
And maybe even worse than that on Wednesday. So, yikes.
Yeah. Crystal said, this is heartbreaking. I know, as someone who spends a lot of time in the woods, that they are not managing them at all. Weyerhaeuser has piles of wood left after cutting trees down. They don't clean up at all like they once did. Let's see here. Christina, I was in Spokane over the weekend. I saw the Fairview fire right as it started. We were at a hotel just outside the evacuation zone. Very scary, sad time for those impacted. And it is, like you heard that guy say, like, why would I rebuild? I don't want to end up doing this again. And I guess that is just always sort of a risk when you live in a wildfire prone area, but it's horrible. Spark of Pierre said, Brandy, the immediate answer is no. However, there is a behemoth of a fire heading our way from about 70 miles away. Yeah, hopefully 70 miles is far enough that it won't impact you, but the smoke and the haze definitely will. And you know what? You might not be impacted today, but I mean, even in East King County, there are concerns that it could get, you know, hot enough and dry enough for a wildfire to spark up. And then you have so many recreation areas with people burning when they shouldn't burn and all this stuff. So just feel horrible for everyone over in Spokane. All right, let's see. Comments from the live stream. Apparently there was an issue with our Facebook feed. It kept freezing today.
And
so
I think it ended a little early too. I'm not sure why.
Yeah, something going on with Facebook. We don't know.
We'll look into it.
Probably
sorry
a Facebook
that, guys.
Issue.
Hopefully everybody moved over to YouTube.
Yeah. On the fires in Spokane, Lolly says, thank God my friends and family are safe in Spokane. Heartbreaking. Sharon says, am I correct in understanding that these fires are man-made? If so, can we call it arson and not a wildfire? Well, I think arson implies intent. And so if you didn't intentionally spark a wildfire, I don't think you could call it arson. And we still have a lot of information. I don't want to jump the gun. And I think that's correct, right? I think arson would have to be you intended.
Well, yeah, you would still call it a wildfire caused by arson, right?
I mean, that would still be wildfire caused by like a human, a person. But I think arson implies you intentionally sought to light something on fire, not like, oh, my fire pit got out of control.
Right, but I just mean that I believe that has happened.
Yeah.
Or they have intentionally done that. But if it's
firework
or something, then
the Palisades. Elizabeth, we need to manage our areas that are prone to fire as it helps with these situations.
Yeah.
Sorry, I skipped you. Go ahead.
So on Sophie and school officials being charged for not reporting.
Not Sophie, Callie.
Sorry. Sophie's in my brain. She's been in my brain for like a week and a half now. User Z says, give me a break. Anyone who wrestled or grappled
grappled.
Yeah, grappled knows when someone violates because it's intentional.
Yeah, and that's what I heard. Before we did the Cali Keeler story, we spoke to two people who have wrestled at the highest levels of the competition, including a former Olympic wrestler who said no. Oil checking or whatever is very rare. And if it's done, it's usually very fleeting. Like it's, and if it's not fleeting, it's intentional. Mm-hmm. So we didn't hear from anybody who thought that looked or sounded like something that was accidental. Marksman mm-hmm. Hitman sounds like human rights violations all over the place and right to speedy trial as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, again, if you're not reporting it for 2 months, how can you conduct a thorough, timely investigation? And it's not fair to the person being accused either, right? You want that mm-hmm. investigation to be done quickly to say yay or nay.
Right. Matthew Cook says the sexual assault was the whole point of the claim in the first place.
Right. True. And so for the principal to say, oh, the mom brought it up to me, but didn't mention the assault. What would she have mentioned then?
Yeah, what was
because the assault was the thing. So what did she say to you? So he lied to that school resource officer. And I think that's part of this that's getting lost. Haynes, Haynes hoping it would blow over strategy isn't working too well.
Nope.
Yeah, sure, I think that's what they were. And because
glad Callie emailed
Callie
us.
Callie was which high school?
Rogers High.
Rogers. Okay. And then the other was Puyallup there's a third Puyallup High School. I get some of them confused.
Yes. The other one.
It's okay. We don't have to get it right now. But there's multiple different Puyallup high schools. And so high schools in Puyallup.
Yeah, it was Emerald Ridge. Was so one of them.
Was the opposing wrestler. Yeah, I believe was Emerald so. Ridge. Yeah, okay. All right. On Katie Wilson's leadership or lack thereof, Necro Two Shoes says they've somehow managed to not need to talk about the usual suspect involved in the murders. The system continues to work for the left. Yeah, I mean, they won't, I guess, what do you want them to say? Like, the suspects are black, if they are, but they won't release any information on the outstanding mm-hmm. suspects. Because they said at the press conference on Friday that they want to avoid innocent people's like images being put out. And I get it. But at the same time, if there's shooters on the loose for like a mass shooting, wouldn't you just say, hey, this is a person we want to speak to as part of the investigation?
Mm-hmm. Anyway. I also think that it's funny the way they would protect it. Because really what she needed to say was, we think it's a gang shooting. We don't think there's a threat to the public. I mean, that right. could have been said an hour into it. They knew it was a gang.
This was targeted. We don't think that they're out just shooting. And we knew it was gang. Yeah.
And that's why there's no sense of urgency now. Because they just shoot each other, typically. It's just that people got in the way this time. And so they're just trying to manage the group settings and keep public away from them. But that's why there's no sense of urgency. But just say that.
Just say it. They don't want to say it. Oh, we don't want to be offensive. Gang. Right. All right. You want to do Milkman?
Milkman says, local media are slowly growing balls because of Brandy.
I don't know if it's because of me or they just had a wake up. I don't know. T-Man, imagine being paid $500,000 to resign. WTF, more than $500,000 to resign. Yeah, it's wild.
With the Cobra as well. The Cobra's expensive.
Yeah.
Yikes. Stephanie Dudley says her rehearsal answers give us no confidence whatsoever.
Yeah, clearly rehearsed. Clearly rehearsed.
Clearly.
Mm-hmm. On the movement to protect girls' sports growing, Chris says, nice work on this, Brandy. You truly helped start a movement. I can't take all the credit for it. Women Are Real are the ones who ultimately had the idea for the rally mm-hmm. in Seattle. We just showed up, got the girls some front row seats, but everything just worked out to, look, if I could go back, would I prefer that the co-owner of the Storm not go up to Annalee Wilson and harass her in the middle of the game and make her cry and ruin her time? Yes, of course. But maybe that needed to happen in order to wake people up to just how vicious the other side is on this issue.
From Chips. Brandy, thank you. You were an integral part of bringing this no biological boys and girls sports to the attention of the nation.
And look, I hate to say this, but I feel like all of it is for nothing if we don't pass that initiative in November. Because this has been 2.5 years. We need to get that initiative passed. Vote yes. Vote yes. Vote yes. Lachman, all this stuff with Sophie, it's exposing the wacko left. 100%.
Mm-hmm. And then John Jacobson says, sanity is gaining traction.
Gaining traction.
Hopefully. I mean, I think the real craziness of the conversation is being exposed.
Yeah.
And that's why even the coaches and players that are talking about it, I mean, they look embarrassed.
They look embarrassed.
Because they know what they're saying is nonsense.
Yeah.
I mean, they know it. And the one coach has said, well, I mean, so few people are trans, but I mean, the number is growing. Exactly. That's why we're talking about this, because the number is growing for some strange reason, and it will hit the WNBA. It'll hit. Yeah. It'll hit all the sports, all the women's sports.
If you let in a state. Good point. This is a good point. If you let one of these boys play as a girl in a state like Washington through, you know, junior high, high school, and they're recruited to a school to play as a girl. I mean, they're playing as a girl. So if everyone lets him play as a girl, they're gonna and they're gonna be better than everyone.
Yeah, well,
they're gonna be better. They're gonna end up in the WNBA.
Maybe with the exception of the kid that played against Francis, who self-admittedly was not very good.
Yes, Francis like, Stoudemire.
I'm not very good.
Yeah,
I just wanted to play.
But
he was playing in a game because he was good enough as somebody that admitted he wasn't that good for a boy.
Yeah. So it just is an absolute ridiculousness that they would even say. No. Mm-hmm. And then the head coach of the Lynx had the protect or trans kids belong shirt on. And I want to say to her, ma'am,
have you not been listening?
But like, yes, of course, trans kids belong where? Right. Like on the planet. Sure, I don't think trans kids is a real thing. I think it's parents who want basically a designer handbag of a child, and
or
they want to tell all their friends, like, oh yeah, my kid's trans or whatever it is. But nobody is saying trans people aren't people and that they're not deserving of love and respect and human rights. I believe that of most humans on the planet, unless you're like a dictator or a murderer or something like that. And the question isn't even, can they play in sports? Of course they can play in sports. I think sports is an awesome, good hobby for every child. They just have to play in the sport that aligns with their biological gender, because that's the only way to make it fair.
And again, for that coach to say, oh, I played against boys. You played against boys when you were a child.
Right.
When you were very little and nobody had developed at that point or, you know, became muscular men.
It's like, not what we're talking about. Callie Keeler wrestled against boys when she was a kid. She wrestled for 14 mm-hmm. years. And then she thought, which at the high school level, that was not going to happen again.
Right.
Because that's when they start to grow and they're bigger and stronger. And then,
hormones,
you know,
make one a difference.
She was surprised mm-hmm. with one. Absolutely outrageous. Good comments, you guys. All right. Before we get to our closing sanity check, a lot of investors right now focused on AI, crypto, tech, what's happening, obviously, with energy. And so you want to make sure that your financial advisor, your money manager, is looking out for all of these things and adjusting accordingly. Our friend Zach Abraham can give you a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. And there's really no downside to it. It's free to do his Know Your Risk portfolio review. He's my money manager, Nicole's money manager. He's my mommy's money manager. And I love Zach. He's a straight shooter, as you see when we have him on Swamp Watch, and he can just go through sort of how Bulwark Capital is focused on risk management, how they're always looking for opportunities to lower your risk, lower your cost, and then, of course, give your retirement as much upside as possible. We're all working very hard to hopefully be able to have wonderful, fabulous retirements. You don't want to put it in needless risk. And so just getting a second opinion is a great idea. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. And unlike other wealth management firms, you can get market updates every day from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk Podcast YouTube channel and all social media platforms. Just search Know Your Risk Podcast. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right. I have been just waiting for news agencies to admit their complicity in the Fauci diaries, the Fauci files. Because, of course, like, Fauci's in his diary being like, today I had dinner with Jake Tapper, XXO, heart, smiley face. And then he's like, today, Dana Bash with CNN messaged me and said this and this, and she loves me and thinks I'm great. And it's like, CNN's like, I'm sorry, any credible news organization would have to put it, should put out a statement addressing those journalistic lapses, any credible news organization, but they just bury it, right? And Dana Bash was even more bold than that. She has on RFK Jr. to talk about vaccines and what's going on with Fauci. And I'm like, Dana Bash, who cares? I was like, Dana, you have to know that at this point, he has so much ammo against you that this is not going to go well. And it didn't.
Do you see your job as ending vaccine hesitancy, or do you see your job as telling the truth to the American people?
I see my job as telling the truth. And the truth is
so defensive.
That there is study after study after study. It's one of the most studied things out there in science.
You're repeating it like a parrot. You're repeating it like a parrot.
So
I've actually read the science.
I know you have, but what am I?
You don't want to
come back here and debate the science.
I'm not debating this with you.
Of course you won't.
No, because I'm not debating.
All you know how to do is repeat things that people told you and say, trust the experts. That's what you did during COVID. Now we know that Anthony Fauci, who was the expert, was lying about everything, about masks, about social distancing, about natural immunity, about the transmission from the vaccine, about the source of COVID. He was lying, and you were punishing people for not trusting the experts. And now you're rolling out the experts again.
Yes.
to talk about something that you have no personal knowledge of.
Okay, well, guess what?
What?
That is my job, to talk to people.
Your job is to tell the truth to the American public.
Yes, yes. And my job is to get as much information as I can.
And to maintain a posture of serious skepticism.
What we were doing in COVID and still with regard to these vaccines is getting the best information, the best science that we can, and putting it out there. And sir, what you are doing is causing information to be out there that is not accurate.
Wow. Wow. I mean, how defensive she gets, just she tells on herself right there. But, you know, it started with an exchange about, oh, you're creating vaccine hesitancy. And he rightly points out, is it your job to stop vaccine hesitancy or just to tell the truth and to put information out there and let people decide whether they want to get a vaccine or not get a vaccine? Because she's basically advocating for vaccines. And then here she's grilling him about, you're putting information out that's not true. Are they grilling themselves and Anthony Fauci for all the very clear information he lied about publicly while telling the truth about to himself in his own diaries? It's absolutely wild that these people don't see it. And I just love that RFK Jr. took her to task for just being a parrot. And the one sentence where he says, it's your job to maintain a posture that's always critical of government authority. And it is. It doesn't matter if you think what they're doing is right. Your job as a member of the media and a member of the Fourth Estate is to always be critical of what the government is doing, not to cheer them on and not to cheer on Anthony Fauci. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. We have a bit more appreciation, however, for our paid subscribers who shell out $5 of their hard-earned money every month to help support our show and make it possible. If you'd like to have a touch more of our gratitude, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. We'll see you back here, same time, same place, tomorrow.